Okay, Shalom Aleichem. As we discussed, we started touching on the inexhaustible parsha of Matan Torah, and based on the discussions here, we decided we would continue the subject. So we're going to continue in the parsha of Matan Torah again. If you have a chumash, you can follow along. If not, you'll be fine. We're going to probably see a few words and then kedarkeinu talk for a while. So we discussed Klal Yisrael's arrival at Midbar Sinai at length a couple of weeks ago. But we then move on to the next stage, which is yet before Aseres HaDibros, and that is the communications between Klal Yisrael and Hashem that were going on during the time that they arrived in. Now, to us, it seems like it's a technicality. You know, they came, Hashem is offering them the Torah, there's a back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. But we have to appreciate that no, it was actually much more than that. These communications with Hashem do something to you, even if it's via a middleman. And certainly when the middleman is Moshe. And therefore, these communications themselves were very, very significant in terms of laying down the ground for Matan Torah. So let's see the dynamics here, and let's see exactly the way it's all expressed. So they arrive in Midbar Sinai. They arrive in Midbar Sinai. Klal Yisrael camps there, and then in Pasuk Gimel, the Torah says, "U'Moshe Allah El Elokim." Immediately, Moshe ascends up to Hashem, meaning he goes up to Har Sinai. And then what? Vayikra lo Hashem in Ahar Leimar. And then Hashem calls to him from Har Sinai, saying, Koy Soima Yaakov, the whole proposition that we'll see when we get to it. But the whole proposition, here's the message I want you to give over, etc. But it's an interesting thing, because it seems like it was a response to Moshe, meaning they came to Har Sinai, they were here to get the Torah. Hashem's proposal was going to come, wasn't it? But the way it's expressed in the pasuk is Moshe went up and then Hashem told him that. So there's something interesting here. And maybe we said this when we started talking about it, I'm not sure. But we don't have enough of a picture of Moshe Rabbeinu's role here. You see, Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu was in the fact that he was so just reflective of Hashem, so transparent toward Hashem, it was almost like he wasn't there. Right? Everything is about Moshe Rabbeinu just bringing the word of Hashem, and you almost think like it could have been anyone if you just look at the words of the pasuk. Of course, there are the crises that he dealt with, but I'm saying just in terms of the ongoing reality of giving the Torah. Right? Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Lema, right? That's the most ubiquitous pasuk in the Torah. I don't know how many such psukim we have in the Torah. Many, 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 right? Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, and Moshe gave it over. So it almost seems like he was just a mouthpiece, which really was the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. The greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu was that he put himself to a place that there was no Moshe Rabbeinu to see. He was simply reflecting Hashem. Yet, we have to appreciate the role that he played as the middleman between Hashem and us. You see, the Gemara makes a big deal about it. It says that this was the greatness of the Torah, the greatness of the, I forgot exactly the wording of the Gemara, but we focus on the greatness of the giver, right? That's Hashem. The greatness of the receiver, that's us. That's Hashem's people, Am Yisrael. And the greatness of the middleman, meaning we would think that that's a very small piece in the picture, right? There's Hashem, there's the Jewish people. Well, we know Moshe Rabbeinu is put there as a critical piece in the picture, the middleman, the greatness of the role of the middleman, which means that there was a lot of middling, if you will. I don't know if that's a proper word, but there was a lot of middling that had to be done. And here we'll start appreciating that, and we'll appreciate quite the immense responsibility that Moshe shouldered and what we all owe him in terms of Hakaras HaToiv. I'll just say in parentheses, as far as that goes. I once heard a very fascinating back and forth between Rabbi Israel Tauber and Rabbi Shimshon Pinkus, they used to work together in terms of the Shalhevet seminars. Rabbi Israel Tauber was talking about the opportunity of life, how as great as a person was in his lifetime, once he's not here anymore, he depends on the mercies of the people who are down here. They can better his situation. He can be in a very great situation, but there's nothing more he can do to better his situation. So Rabbi Israel Tauber said, for example, Moshe Rabbeinu, he said, he is, we can't imagine where he is, but there's nothing more he could do for himself. Right? He can't better his situation in any way. While he said, somebody down here gives money to tzedakah and says, Le'ilui Nishmas Moshe ben Amram, and he can actually be enhancing Moshe Rabbeinu's Olam Haba. This is what Rabbi Israel Tauber said. And then he turned to Rav Pinkus. I heard this all on the recording. He turned to Rav Pinkus and he said, what do you say about this, Rav Shimshon? And Rav Pinkus said, no. We draw a line there. None of us should think that we can affect Moshe Rabbeinu in any way. So in that sense, what?
Beyond.
He's beyond, exactly. He's beyond. And in that sense, no. But in terms of appreciating Moshe Rabbeinu, that we should do to whatever extent we can, while realizing, like you said, at the end of the day, it's going to be beyond. That's what I also heard. I know that there's different takes on this, but there are those that say also not to name after Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Because it's like it's untouchable. It's untouchable. There are other approaches, certainly, but I'm just noting that. But whatever the case is, here we have a little bit of an inkling of the role that Moshe Rabbeinu played and the benefit that he provided us with. And that is as follows. Hashem was going to give the Torah to the Jewish people. But, you know, when you plant something in the ground, you plant a very, very great and quality seed in the ground. It's not only about the quality of the seed, and it's not only about the skill of the farmer. It's also about the quality of the soil, right? It'll certain so the more quality the soil, if you take the best seed in the world and you plant it in top quality soil, you're going to have an unbelievable product.
Does he send rain or this?
Yeah, I'm talking in natural terms,
Oh.
right? But if you take the top quality seed and you plant it in mediocre soil, it's not going to be the best this seed could have produced. When Hashem gave the Torah, it wasn't like, well, the Torah is the Torah. Klal Yisrael were the soil that it needed to be planted in. And Klal Yisrael's attitude and state at the time when they were getting the Torah, their attitude toward it would make a big difference in the way the Torah would be implanted in them for all of eternity. And therefore, part of Moshe Rabbeinu's role was, and this we're going to see here as we go along, was to try to have Klal Yisrael in that state. And this was a very weighty thing. Hashem, on his end, was giving kibiyachol infinitely. But what's with the receiving end? That isn't necessarily infinite. That's not necessarily going to be top, unless they bring themselves to that place. And this was Moshe Rabbeinu's, if you will, his tension was to be able to have Klal Yisrael. He felt that riding on his shoulders. Have Klal Yisrael as the most fertile soil possible in order to get the Torah in the most optimal way. This was the responsibility that he was carrying in this whole process. So therefore, we'll just see one example here. One example is that we see that as soon as they arrive in Midbar Sinai, Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't wait to be called up. He immediately ascends to Hashem. Why? So the Or HaChaim says this was already the process of Hashem's giving the Torah will depend on the state of the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu was already bringing out the eagerness, meaning he said, if we come to Har Sinai and we wait for Hashem to call me, that's one level. But if I'm putting myself out there before that and I'm telling Hashem, we're here, give it, bring it on, that's a different level. And therefore, Moshe went up immediately, basically to show that eagerness, that enthusiasm. And what was the effect? The effect was, like call of Hashem in Ahara, immediately Hashem responded by saying, here's my proposition. What would have happened if Moshe wouldn't have gone up? The proposition would have come anyways. Maybe it would have come 2 days later. Maybe it wouldn't have come with the same, we're going to see here, what that how rich Hashem's proposition was. Maybe it wouldn't have come that to that same degree. It would have come. That's what they were there for. That's what Hashem brought them there for. But here we're seeing Moshe with his attunedness is making sure to maximize the reality of Kabbalah Satorah. And therefore, this is what we're seeing here. It's what they call in this forum is Isarusa Dilettata. The arousal from down below is what affects, is what causes the quality of the Isarusa Dileela, of the effect from on high. The more powerful our receptiveness and the more we demonstrate that, the greater the effect of what is going to come from on high is going to be.
Did they count Omer? Were they counting Omer up to give some of the Torah only wages?
Were they counting the Omer? The mitzvah of the Omer was not yet given then technically, yet the reality of the Omer certainly was there. And presumably they went through the process. Did they go through the process in the same way we do? I'm not sure. But conceptually, they certainly did. The Omer was a very important part of leading up toward Matan Torah. Okay, so here is where we're getting an inkling to Moshe's role. Okay, now let's move on to Hashem's proposition. Okay, so right, Moshe showed that eagerness, and Hashem responded with that chavivus vayikra. We see his miloshin is a term of endearment. Of Hashem is showing his how he endears Moshe's effort and Moshe and the people he's representing, and he says, okay, and now Hashem comes with his proposal. His proposition. Here is what you should say, right? Say to the Beis Yaakov and say to the Bnei Israel. We're all familiar with the terms here. I'm sorry? The Toimar le Beis Yaakov is a bit of a soft, Amira is a softer way of saying something for the women, that's right. Versus Dibor, which is a harsher way of saying something, and that was for the men. Now, Rashi says that Hashem said, I'm going to give you a formula now. Usually, I don't know if usually, but very often, a Navi is not given precise words. A Navi is given a vision that then he gives over in his words. He expresses it the way he took it in. And that's why you'll find different Nevi'im with different styles of expression. Yeshaya has one style, Yechezkel has another style, etc. But here Hashem tells him, here I want you to give over these precise words. As we're going to see now, every word here was measured and with a very precise agenda. So the Or HaChaim says, the message that I'm about to convey has two sides to it. And what is Hashem going to go on and say? Hashem goes on and says, you saw everything that I did in Mitzrayim. Now, do you want to be my people? Okay, what is Hashem conveying when he says, you saw everything that I did in Mitzrayim? What's that got to do with anything? So, simply understood, what Hashem is saying, you saw who I am, you saw my might, as we discussed other times, you saw my love for you and my care for you. So here the Or HaChaim says, this one expression, you saw what I did in Mitzrayim, had two sides to the coin. It was an expression of love, an expression of softness, caring. It was also had a certain harsh edge to it. How's that? So the Or HaChaim says something which is really very fundamental to our Yiddishkeit in general. What is our dynamic with Hashem meant to be? Love, fear, is it about we're doing things, Hashem's mitzvahs because we want to do them, or is it because you're doing them because you must do them? Which is it? Oh, the answer is it has to be both. It must be both. One without the other is creating a very problematic imbalance. And therefore, Hashem contained both. Meaning, I would even say more than that. The primary ingredient of our relationship with Hashem is love. The primary experience of doing the mitzvahs is an experience of closeness, an experience of elevation. Yet, if you don't realize that you must be doing them, and that there really are no two ways about it, there's something missing in your relationship with Hashem. You don't really appreciate what it means to have a relationship with a God. A relationship with, on the one hand, Hashem drawing you close is so exhilarating, and on the other hand, there's something fearsome about it. There's something awesome about it, and you have to be experiencing both in order to be in a true, fully rounded relationship with Hashem. It's not so popular nowadays. We don't like to hear about that other side of it. But say that I think that the Olam here can handle it. Now, so Hashem tells them, you saw everything that I did in Mitzrayim. You saw how awesome I am and how I tore apart all forces of nature and the greatest nation in the world because they were hurting you, because of my love for you. And this is the basis for my proposal to you. And that's what I want you to be experiencing, my love. But there's another message here. You saw what I did to Mitzrayim. Same words. But you saw how dangerous it is to be defying my word. I want both messages. And therefore, Hashem told Moshe, give it over precisely with these words, because I want both messages to be conveyed at the same time. Appreciate the unbelievable privilege that I'm doing for you by drawing you close to me. And be drunk with enthusiasm about that. And at the same time, realize quite who you're dealing with. And realize the stakes. Realize the stakes. So, and then he goes on. Where is the main stress supposed to be between these two dynamics? So let's see how Hashem continues. After Hashem got across his message, where does he put the focus? What's that an expression of? Which of the two is that? I bore you aloft on the wings of Nisharim. I brought you close to me. I brought you all the way to me. Yeah, Hashem is saying, we got in the fear element. Make sure that's there. But now let's move on. The experience on an ongoing basis, this is how it should be with a parent also. The relationship is built on love. The relationship is primarily about love. It's primarily an experience of love. But the ingredient should be there. But now we move on. You saw me bear you aloft. You saw me bear you aloft like a nesher. I'm not translating the word nesher because there are people we learned since we were little babies to translate it as eagle. Right? But it's not necessarily, it's questionable what it really is. But that's right. It might be the big griffin vultures. Right. What's that? Maybe in figurative terms. But whatever the case is, we're talking about the mightiest of birds that soars on high, right? That's what we're talking about. The most majestic, mighty bird that soars highest. Right? And this is what Hashem is describing here. I raised you up way above everything else and bore you aloft on my, so to speak, my wings. All of these things are Hashem describing the experience of him bringing us close. Let's get into what this means, Hashem's description here. So first of all, there's the famous Rashi. And Rashi says, notes the difference between the way a nesher carries its brood and the way other birds carry their brood. So most birds are worried about attack from birds of prey above them. So they carry their young and their claws underneath them. Whereas the Nesher, he doesn't have anything to be afraid of. There's no one's above him. Only thing he has to be afraid of is people shooting arrows from the ground. He only has to be afraid of attacks from below. And therefore, he, unlike the other birds, he carries his young on top of him. I don't know, but again, eagles don't actually are not the highest flying birds. It's really the griffin vultures that soar way, way, way above. And they're known also for their soaring. They just have their wings open miles on end. So how does it actually work? Yeah. So now Rashi says, this is how I dealt with you also. Right? When the Mitzrayim were coming to attack you, I spread myself out in front of you to absorb their attacks. To absorb their attacks. I took in the arrows and the boulders. Like, this is Hashem showing his love for us. This is Hashem showing his love and his care for us. I just want to ask a question here. You talk about the Nesher. Okay, it's showing sacrifice for its young. Right? It's willing to take the arrow rather than it hit the young. In Hashem's case, is it showing sacrifice? Right? You know the story there. Rabbeinu and Eibeshit said one time, you know, a priest or some Christian kid started up with him and said, "You know, you killed our God." So Rabbeinu and Eibeshit responded to him and said, "So you kill ours." So, in other words, we're not really very worried about. So, what is the greatness of Hashem saying, "I spread myself out in front of you"? So let's appreciate this is not about Hashem endangering himself, of course. What is it about? It's about you're talking about the Melech Malchei Amlochim. For him to say, "I'm going to field the boulders," this is about his honor, right? He's saying, "I am going to put myself there. Let the boulders hit me. Let the arrows come into me." This is Hashem saying, so to speak, "Now, my place is way on high, but I, so to speak, in order to protect you, I'm going to lower myself and be the one facing the Mitzrayim and say, 'Here, send me your boulders. Send me your arrows. I'll take them.' For your good and for your benefit, and even more for your comfort, I'm going to lower myself." Just another example of this is the famous idea by a Saita. We're not going to get into the whole parsha of the Saita there, but the famous idea that Hashem says, "Erase my name." What is it, right? With the Saita, with the woman who is suspected of being disloyal, Hashem says, "Erase my name onto the water." What does Hashem say to do that? What's the ultimate goal of it? It's to test her, but what's the goal of that? The goal of that is not in order to catch her guilty. Really, the main idea is let's find that she was innocent and thereby restore the Shalom Bayis, right? So, in other words, Hashem is saying, "I'm allowing you to erase my name so that another home in Yisrael should be optimally set up, that the Shalom Bayis there should be optimal." So, this is the first thing that Hashem is expressing here.
I know B'nai Israel had a hard time with a few hundred years trying that Hashem didn't show his face at all. How did that ever get like explained to them that they were able to now accept everything?
How did that get resolved? How did the trauma get resolved, if we'll put it that way? So let's appreciate something. Why did Hashem do it? Why did Hashem put them through that and then take them out? Why did he set it up that way? Oh, exactly. The point was for them to, you appreciate something to the extent that you experienced its opposite. When do we enjoy food most, right? After a fast, right? So you experience, you appreciate something to the extent you experienced its opposite. Hashem wanted us to appreciate what it means, not just to be free, but to be brought all the way close to Him. And therefore, before bringing us up to the highest heights possible, He brought us down to the lowest place possible. Now, had Hashem taken us from ordinary life, would have called us, sent out a group email, "Everybody gather on this and this day, I'm going to give you the Torah." Very nice. Probably not everybody would have been able to make it. Whatever. People would have asked for a recording. But when Hashem put them in the lowest of places and catapulted them to the highest of places, the thrill was so great that they said, "Wow, in order to experience this, we're happy that you put us there in the first place." It completely uprooted the negativity of the whole experience. He said, "This is what it was leading to. We wouldn't be mevater on that. We wouldn't be mevater on that." In order to get the full effect of Hashem bringing them all the way high up. And here, right, here's how Hashem expresses it now. He says, "Vavi eschem Eloi, I bore you aloft," right, so to speak, on the wings of an Esher, "and I brought you to me," meaning, I brought you all the way up to me, meaning when I brought you to Har Sinai, I took you out of the whole realm of the physical world. That's really what Midbar Sinai was. That was part of the immensity of the whole experience. Midbar Sinai, we see from the Gemara, it was a place that did not support life. Even nomads didn't travel in the areas where the Bnei Israel traveled in the 40 years. Travelers did not pass through those areas in the Midbar. The elements were so vicious that life couldn't be supported there. It wasn't even for tough travelers, desert travelers, not those areas. They didn't traverse those areas. We Dafka moved through those areas in the Midbar. The point being that Hashem was saying, now You are outside the physical world. You're not in a part of the physical world that can support life, Bichlal. I am your life. You are riding on me. I am carrying you now through this. And this is what he's expressing here when he's saying, I brought you to me, meaning I took you out of the whole realm of the physical. And I'm bringing you for the purpose of bringing you to the closest place you could be to me. This is what we say in Shir HaShirim. Hevi'ani HaMelech HaDor of Klal Yisrael looks back with nostalgia. There was never such a time of exhilarating closeness as then. So Hevi'ani HaMelech HaDor of Hashem brought us to his innermost chambers. We enjoy the highest levels of intimate closeness with Hashem. Then back at Har Sinai. This is what Hashem is saying. This is what you've been experiencing me doing for you. And this is where Hashem, how Hashem is leading it up to his proposal, do you want to be bound up with me forever?
They say that everything's, and we see if things are going to get worse and worse and worse, and God and God and all of that. Is that the same sort of process where things get like if things are going pretty well and Mashiach appears, maybe people say, well, we like our life, we're not so keen. Do you think it's a similar process that's happening before Mashiach comes, where things are just getting tougher and tougher until
Right.
all the point where people just they don't have a choice but to say
Right.
we want.
So I don't know, but what we can say is presumably there's a couple of elements here. Why is it following this process of things getting worse toward Mashiach's arrival? So first of all, it's likely, as you're saying, that's probably one element of it, and that is, it's like the Ramchal, the Ramchal, his easy sefer is Maaseiyos Yesharim. The next sefer, Rabbi Malinowitz said it in his more blunt way, but I'll say it in my less blunt way. The tougher sefer is Derech Hashem, but then the even tougher sefer is Das Tvunis. Das Tvunis, basically, one of the central themes there is that the whole system of the Golos is exactly that. It's that the light is so much brighter when it's against the dark background. And therefore, the dark leads to the light. Without the dark beforehand, the light doesn't shine as brightly. You don't see it as bright, right? Any photographer knows that you contrast, right? So that's element number one. There are presumably another two elements there. And that is that, first of all, it's to lead people up to a place of, to become a little less in love with the reality of Olam Hazeh. And to sense that, you know what, this is actually not my world. And it's like the Gemara says, Hashem wants us to bring us to a place of Ein lanu amili she'en ela lavinu shebashamayim. Hashem wants more and more Jews to sense that if we don't have Hashem just stepping in, then forget about it. The more clear that is, the better ready we are for Mashiach coming. And therefore, we've been discussing this throughout the process of Corona, throughout the process of the last almost 2 years, is that let's loosen our tight bond a bit with Olam Hazeh, with the comfortable world that we think, oh, this is our world. Let's get ourselves to more to a place of not necessarily. And then we are really in position to see Hashem step in and say, oh, we saw it coming to this. Exactly. Okay, a gute Woche. We'll stop here.
Why? Can I ask a question?
Yes.
If there was no Goyim passing